welcome to Keys to the Kingdom. I'm Brother Gregory, and we're going to talk about the Kingdom of Heaven. Today is, I think, the day before Halloween, or the day of Halloween. I guess it would be the eve before what they've often called All Saints Day. It's a holiday, at least all over America. I don't know how many other countries celebrate that holiday. It's kind of a bizarre holiday, kind of unique and unusual. What's it all about, this trick-or-treat, this Halloween? It's supposed to be all the goblins and ghouls come out the night before All Saints Day, all the ones who didn't make it to heaven, I guess. That's part of the folklore around the holiday, and they go around doing all kinds of tricks on people. And so they go from door to door and they say, trick or treat, give us a treat or we'll play a trick on you. So I guess it's celebrating extortion. I think that is just such a strange holiday, and we actually encourage all our children to run from house to house and yell trick or treat and get candy. And, of course, there's always the annual scare that somebody's going to put razor blades in an apple or, you know, poison some child, and all these precautions that have come up over the years, which is really bizarre. Now, when I was a small boy down in Houston, Texas, I did trick-or-treating, and the idea was to get to as many houses as you could before the parents started saying, what are you doing out so late? And we would run from house to house yelling trick-or-treat, trying to get, as soon as you got your candy, you ran to the next house. It was just like some sort of a charge of the light brigade, going from house to house to house until the last of the guys. And then the next day you would go through your bag of treats like you had been out treasure hunting. And it was something that you just were taught to do. That's what everybody else was doing, so you did it. You didn't naturally celebrate Halloween. Somebody had to teach you to celebrate Halloween. And you were taught, as usual, mostly by your peers, other kids who were already doing it before you knew anything about it. And it developed into quite a ritual. And we would overdo the candy and make it stretch as long as we could. And, of course, there were trading sessions the next day where I don't like this. And, you know, nobody could get rid of some of the candies, you know. And some people even started putting healthy things in the trick-or-treat bag. That was such a disappointment to young people at the time. But it is a bizarre holiday. It is a strange holiday. And, of course, there are many Christians now that are saying, oh, it's an evil holiday. It's celebrating wickedness and all these sorts of things. And it stems back to Babylon and the Druids and all these, you know, that mean people are selling whole CDs and videos on how bad Halloween is. But you really have to just look at the ideas and the messages that the holiday sends and the purpose of the holiday or what it accomplishes to know whether or not you should be celebrating Halloween. And I don't really care if you celebrate Halloween or not. I'm not making a rule or regulations on it. I just want you to think about what you're doing when you do these things and these holidays you have. Now, ancient Israel had all kinds of holidays, and even they're prescribed in the Bible to have some of these holidays. And they mention other holidays you're not to have and other customs and rituals you're not to have. But there's a reason behind these. And if we lose sight of the reason, before we know it, we'll be turning the holidays of God into nothing more than the rituals and ceremonies of Nimrod, because we've lost sight of the Spirit. And this is a big danger in people that are pursuing an answer other than the stock answer that we've all been given to the problems of the world. The people who are trying to think outside of the box often are simply thinking in another box. they haven't really become free. They actually quickly began to create another prison, another box, in which you must think inside this box or you're bad, wicked, terrible, awful sinner, and we can have nothing to do with you. They create, you have to use certain words, certain letters. That's idolatry to create that. God is not subject to the pronunciations of our mouths. He is not subject to the words that we use to communicate with. He does not really even have a name. He was known as the God with no name. And then when we were given a name, it had a meaning. The letters had a meaning, and they were trying to tell us something with that name. Just as I've gone through this, we have an article up on the web at hisholychurch.info. What's in a name? And the fact is for centuries, people named their children at birth. They renamed them when they became near adulthood, often renaming them again after they've proven themselves as an adult. The name was a way to identify who you were and who you were changed as you grew up, matured, repented, what have you. Simon became Peter. Saul became Paul. Very common, Hoses became Barnabas. These ideas of changing your name because you yourself have changed is a common practice throughout the history of mankind. But God never changes, so his name never changes. But we have many names for him, you know, like Christ, Prince of Peace, etc. Some suggest that Jesus' name or Yeshua's name was not even Yeshua, but that was a title that was put on him and that was passed down. If you look in the Old Testament, we have names like Darius. Darius is not his name. That's actually a title that's put on him. That's why there were many Dariuses. We have Caesar Augustus. His name was neither Caesar nor was it Augustus. His name was Octavius. But we know him as Caesar Augustus because that's his title. And I always found it interesting, some of the Indian names. There was an Indian name, Stabs in the Back, and of course sounds like a very bad name, but it actually was a very good name because it meant he was so stealthy in the woods, so quiet when he moved through the woods, that he could come up right behind his enemy without him even knowing it, kind of like a Rambo, and stab him from the back, and he wouldn't even know that he was there. So that was a complimentary name, that he was very good and quiet in the woods, which was considered a virtue amongst the Indians who had to hunt for their food. We let the grandkids see a video that belongs to their father, and it's Survivor Man, I think it is. The young grand boys like to call him Starving Man, because he's always going hungry for 5 or 6 days as he's trying to find food, and he's plopped down somewhere near the Arctic in Alaska on these barren islands and has to survive for 5 days, and eventually he catches some fish, but where he was at, the Eskimos survived every day, every week, every month out of the year. He was barely surviving for 7 days. Fortunately, he found some food, but he was having quite a hard time, and he had, a canoe, and I think he had a rifle, although he never used it. It was mostly for protection from polar bears. The Eskimo had no protection from polar bears, and he's wearing animal skins that are soaked in and seal oil. Yet they survived there without high-powered rifles for centuries. Their survival skills were far in excess of what we have today. They were known to name their people after attributes of character because character was so important. You don't survive without character. You don't survive without virtue. You don't survive without skills. In America today, you can survive if you have a Social Security number. You can go on welfare. You can go on unemployment. You can get government subsidies. Because the government will help you survive even without virtue. And that is maybe the name that should be put on us. He who walks without virtue. He who bites out of his neighbor. Because that's what we do. We don't, in an Eskimo village, you had to share. 10 men went out hunting on the ice in the dead of winter, 40 below, and chopped holes in the ice and sat there and waited, hoping a seal would stick his head up and they would capture that seal and they would eat. Well, 10 men go out. Maybe only one man catches anything. They stand there all day in the freezing cold, but one catches something. And they learn how to stand in the cold and how to survive in the cold. And one man catches something, but all men eat because they share. Because they know that without sharing, there is no life in the Arctic. And this is a survival skill, to share. You go a little farther south and you have the Inuit. They had a custom there that every year or so, they would all meet for a big festival. And they would burn stuff. You would bring canoes and bows and arrows and things that you had made during the year. And you'd burn stuff. And everybody who would throw in as much stuff as possible to burn, the guy who threw in more stuff than anybody else, was considered the man of virtue. Because he was willing to give more stuff up. Now, during hard times, that same ability and willingness to give things up made that man an essential part of the community, because he was a man who was willing to share. They probably didn't burn up stuff all the time, but that was something that they were willing to give stuff up. It was their kind of burnt offering. And of course, in the Old Testament, they had the ritual of the burnt offering. But they didn't just burn it up, but they give it up. They laid it on the stones of the altars, and it was as burned up to them. And the stones of the altars were men, and those men were men of virtue, men who were giving men, men who were willing to sacrifice their time. They were not wait-a-minute men. They were minute men for God. They were men who would come out without anything, at a moment's notice, to serve God, to serve Moses. And they would receive the offerings of the people and redistribute them from house to house according to the needs of the people. This is what the first century church was doing. This was their rituals and ceremonies. They were not mindless, purposeless rituals and ceremonies that killed sheep and burned them up so that God could smell this sweet savor of their sacrifice. There was none of that originally. Those were what we created. The Hebrew text clearly, if you actually understand Hebrew, and the meaning of the letters of the words tells you that that is not what God wants. He does not want burnt offerings of sheep and doves on piles of stone. He wants you to give your sacrifices completely up to men of character, men who are as solid as a rock in their faith. And those men rightly distribute your offerings to God, to the needy of your society. And this is the rituals of God. This is the celebration of God. Now, they had other feasts and holidays, feasts of booths or tabernacles or tents, however you want to say it. It was not anything but a practical event. People from all over got together. Young men met young ladies that they had never known before, and young ladies met young men that they had never seen in the light of their immatureness of youth. And they thought, what a man. And they married them, and they had children, and this kept the bloodline strong and healthy instead of, you know, inbreeding in the same village year after year after year. There was one practical aspect of it. Another practical aspect is everybody in the whole nation had a tent. Everybody in the whole nation knew how to camp. Everybody in the whole nation became involved with other communities outside of their own. Just as we need to gather together in the congregations of our own community to help one another, to make our sacrifices, to take care of our needy, of our society, as a true nation of God, so also did these congregations need to commune with other congregations. If you've got a little congregation that thinks it's thinking outside the box, but it's not linked with other congregations all over the United States, all over the world. I just sent two emails off to Australia and New Zealand this morning. We could, we need to make those connections between congregations the same as we need to make those connections between each other. Because there could become needs in Florida, or when the tsunami hits, you know, the big tidal wave that sweeps halfway across the state. We need to be there for others who are faithful to the ways of Christ, the ways of faith, hope, and charity. That's what the network that we're creating is, holychurch.info. Go there, download or drop down menu under the guy with the net and become a part of the network. Join the network in your area. They're all divided off all over the world, and we have to put in other maps for places like Asia and South America as well, and become involved in those groups. Because they're just as important as the group next door, as the neighbor next door, because they're our neighbors in Christ. The network needs to spread all across the world. Santo Domingo. We have some people going back down to Santo Domingo. I've already opened up a mission there for His Holy Church, for the Kingdom of Heaven. We need to add to that. We need to make those things grow. We need to establish the Kingdom of Heaven by our witness, by our deeds. We need to work together as a community up in Canada. We have needy people in Canada that may need our help. The Canadians need to come together. They have socialized medicine there, and I saw a video of how difficult it is to get some of the basic treatments under socialized medicine. You can't see a doctor for a year sometimes. They're often out of basic medicine. And the United States is quickly following in those footsteps. The fact is, we need to do for us and stop looking to governments to solve our problems. We need to gather together with other Minutemen for Christ who will be there for their neighbor at a moment's notice and take care of one another. And we need to have our holidays, but we need to have meaning in our holidays, purposes in our holidays that actually strengthen society by strengthening the individual, by strengthening the family. Our rituals and ceremonies consist of homeschooling. It doesn't mean that we don't have any formal education outside of the home. The congregation should be a source of great knowledge and information. There will be people who are raising their children and their son shows a proclivity for math, or their daughter shows a proclivity for astronomy. And they don't know anything about those subjects, or very little. But there will be somebody in your congregation, somebody in your congregations of congregations that can help those individuals learn so much more. We should have apprentice programs where my son goes and stays with your family for a short period of time, or for a long period of time, so that he learns the skills that you can offer him that I can't. I have one son that's very good at mechanic work, but I'm not a great mechanic. I'm a shade tree mechanic. They're much better than I can. I've never done that. But if he knew another man who was good at mechanics, he could probably, in a few short months, be of great assistance to that individual who is a mechanic and learn so much more and become stronger in his talents and in his abilities by that mutual working together and sharing together. And you can do the same thing with all kinds of skills and all kinds of abilities. And our sons and our daughters would become stronger, and our communities would become stronger, and our families would become stronger in that communion with one another. That is our rituals and ceremonies. If people have read in the Polity where we talk about the church having the same rituals and ceremonies, it's not about waving your hands or blowing incense out your little and sense takers or any of those things. It's about loving one another. That is our ritual. That is our ceremony. That is the fruits. And the fruits of that is the witness of who we are. But we have to actually do it. It's amazing the number of people we have. We have thousands of people that get the Kingdom newsletter. Everybody should be doing that who's listening to this broadcast. Sign up for the Kingdom newsletter. You can do it on almost every web page. But you should also sign up for the network. And very few of the people on the Kingdom newsletter sign up for the network. I mean, proportionally speaking. There's quite a few people on the network, but not as many as could be. And then those that get on that network are supposed to pick a contact minister, a personal contact minister, someone who they are connected with that is connected with other people on the group. And these groups are based on areas so that it's good, like the people in Houston have a contact minister, and the people in Dallas-Fort Worth area may have another contact minister, and hopefully we'll end up with, you know, 10 contact ministers in the Fort Worth area and 20 in the Houston area and 10 more over in the Dallas area. And each of those men or women will be in charge of keeping track of 10 families and keeping them connected with the other contact ministers. This is the way it works. Tens, hundreds, and thousands. 10 families. So that if you minister, 10 of those ministers pick a minister, and before you know it, through the whole nation, tell 10 people, everybody doing. They weren't just running through every town, look out, the British are coming. They were going to certain people and contacting the ministers in those towns, the network in those towns, and they went out and contacted 10 people. Because actually, poor Paul Revere got lost. He actually didn't warn everybody, but they were a network. There were other guys who were out there writing besides him. And as soon as he told a few, the word began to spread. We have some people in Colorado, and they haven't picked a contact minister. The only group that hasn't, I find that absolutely amazing. It's one of the larger groups. Covers Colorado and Nebraska. And yet they have not been able to vote for two guys. That's all it takes. Two guys vote for one guy, and he becomes a contact minister. They haven't been able to get that together all this time. There's guys who voted for themselves and guys who voted for each other. And there's guys who voted for somebody else. Nobody voted for the same guy twice. Amazing. But we have somebody on that group and in the Indiana group, and maybe, you know, I sent an email off to them because the head of the Indiana group, who's actually in Illinois, and of course he's not the head of the group. He's just the contact minister for whoever he chose. There's enough people in that area to pick several contact ministers.
Years ahead of the dominant media, FirstAmendmentRadio.com and FirstAmendmentRadio.net, around the world and on satellite. Since the beginning of time, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it, it has been traded, it has been borrowed, it has been purchased, it has been stolen, there's a reason for it. Secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and to our poverty. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188 or visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cedarstrom, and regular guest, world-renowned economist Robert Chapman, right here on FirstAmendmentRadio.com at 4 p.m. Eastern or 1 p.m. Pacific Time. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net. Or call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, 1-800-375-4188.
Now listen to me. The Bible says, render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. I want you to know that a corporation is Caesar. Yeah.
government takeover of the church. This DVD is the most powerful tool we have for waking up those asleep in the pews. The scripture calls for his people to come out of her. The corporate church is the apostate church, the whore that rides the beast. Get this DVD for a donation of $25 from FirstAmendmentRadio.com. Make copies and give them away to your corporate church friends and loved ones. The truth will make them free. They will watch the DVD, Government Takeover of the Church. Order online today at FirstAmendmentRadio.com or call 559-781-3773. Who will tell them if not you? Have you seen Loose Change, the most popular documentary in the 911 truth movement? With the coming change in government, now is the time to push for justice and get this truth into the hands of millions of Americans. First Amendment Radio is offering both videos, Loose Change and 911 Justice on DVD. We will ship two copies of both videos to you for $10 cash. Yes, two copies, one for you and one for you to give away. You will see and hear Larry Silverstein admit that they decided to pull the building. Why are they not being pursued? The people must know. Justice must be had. The time is now. Two copies of both videos, Loose Change and 911 Justice, for $10 cash. No checks, please. To First Amendment Radio, 139 East Tulare Avenue, Tulare, California, 93274.
Keys of the Kingdom. Well, we've been talking a little bit about holidays and rituals and ceremonies. The rituals and ceremonies of Christ are different than the rituals and ceremonies of the rest of the world, because his rituals and ceremonies have the purpose of bringing you closer to God. And we were talking a little bit about Halloween. Now, Halloween, sending your children out to threaten your neighbor with trick or treat, which is actually what they're doing. And most kids have absolutely no understanding of what trick or treat means. They just yell it because that's what we were told, trick or treat. And it's like magic words. You say it at that night dressed up in funny costumes and you get candy for people. They just automatically give you candy. It's just a mysterious ritual, and who are we to judge as small children? But you're actually teaching your children to get something for nothing. That's a bad message. To actually go through the ritual of threatening violence against somebody and their property if they don't give you something for nothing. I mean, this is what they're doing. I know most of the kids aren't thinking that out, but this is what they're doing. We had somebody wanted to have their kids earn money for some outing in a local community here, and so they sent their kids around with a tin can, begging for money at everybody's door. And we said, like, what is that? I mean, it's normally you would say, like, oh, put on a car wash or a bake sale or something where you did something for other people and they came and they overpaid for the pie or they overpaid for the car wash, but at least they went out and they didn't really need the car wash, but they went and did it because they wanted to support the kids' project. But here they just went from door to door with tin cans. And I thought, like, what is that message, Cindy? It's just astounding. But those are, and you've got Christmas. Christmas. Everybody has to go out and buy everybody a present because somebody else's supposed birthday. That this ritual giving, it's not a good thing. You should give because there's a need, because it's been put on your heart to give. It shouldn't be a seasonal event. Peace on earth, good will towards men should not be a seasonal event. It should be an everyday event in your life, and not depend. They'll kill each other on the December 24th. On December 25th, we have a ceasefire. We won't kill you today, but we'll kill you on December 26th. Strange, bizarre custom that we are developing, and strange messages we're sending. I haven't celebrated Christmas since I was 9 years old, at least in the manner in which everybody else celebrates it, with buying of gifts. And what cured me is watching, sitting in what was the equivalent of a mall back many, many years ago. So that's, you know, that's over half a century ago. And they came out with a bunch of discount items and threw them on the discount table, which is already full of a bunch of stuff. And the people came around like vultures on a dead carcass. And I looked at the faces. I watched the faces. See, a lot of people would watch the stuff. They'd look at all the stuff that was thrown out. What stuff? Is this good stuff? Is that good stuff? But I looked at the faces of the people, and I said, I don't want any part of that. You know, it's like Monopoly, fake money and real greed. And Christmas is, you know, teaching your children to beg for gifts and hope for gifts, and you're not going to get them until, I mean, you do have the naughty or nice kind of thing, but that's kind of prostitution. If you be good, I pay you. If you don't be good, I will give you a lump of coal. Now, that's just teaching people to do good for reward. That's not doing good for virtue's sake. That's a bad message. You should be telling your children to be good for virtue's sake, because they love being good, not because they get reward. It's like punishing your children if they're bad. Yeah, you may have to do that occasionally. But if your children are afraid of being bad because you're going to beat them up or spank them, that ultimately is not very maturing. That's not a good thing. You need to have your children be good because they love being good, and don't be bad because they hate, you know, vices and they're in opposition because they love the virtue. They don't want to be bad. Very important. So we have a polity now. The polity that we have in the church is a pretty general document. It's not like, as one minister down in Kansas said, this isn't like the polities of other churches. Well, of course it's not. It's not supposed to be. This is Christ's church, and most other churches are very mixed up. They're trying to create a polity of governmental rules and regulations. We're trying to create a polity of precepts and principles that are based upon the precepts upon precepts that we see in the Old Testament and in the New Testament, although most people don't recognize them in the Old Testament because they don't understand how the Old Testament works. And Article 7 is the only article in the polity that has any link to it at all. And it is... also the one that is probably the least understood. it goes, there are two aspects of ritual, service and sacrifice in charity and love. The church established by Jesus Christ sacrifices all its resources in the service of mankind according to the word, way, and will of the Most High God Father and his obedient Son. Services as acts of worship include, but are not limited to, any activity that is a true service to the people. Does the activity strengthen the people or weaken the people? There's a question. You know, free education weakens the people. Oh, it educated an awful lot of people, but free education at the point of forced contributions weakens the people, makes them dependent upon that source, which is a benefactor who is not a benefactor, but one who exercises authority in order to educate your children. It's very difficult to homeschool your children in one sense, because it requires that you give up a lot of your time. You can't just come home and plop down in front of the TV. You have to come home and work with your children and their education. It often costs you more. it requires a great deal more patience because your kids aren't gone most of the day. I mean, what's the first message you send to your children? As a parent, I'm too stupid to educate you. You have to go to professional educators. Well, then you wonder why they're not listening to you when you're older. Well, you sent them away. And what? Who is the biggest teacher in public schools? It's their peers. They teach them far more than the school system teaches them, at least about life. So anyway, the polity goes on to say healing and caring for the sick. Is that the rituals? Do you get together in your church or you just sing? Or do you get together in church meetings and go and visit the sick? And visiting the sick means caring for the sick. Teaching the truth. How much do you spend time in teaching the truth? There are many churches that go door to door and try to teach their form of the truth. But often that is just teaching them more rituals and ceremonies and the outward appearance. Now, you get into Thy Kingdom Come, and you'll see truths that you never saw before. You get in covenants to God, different set of truths. I mean, it's all part of the whole picture, but it's approaching it from a different point of view. Covenants of God talks about the problem of us making contracts with the gods of the world, making covenants with them, applying to them, praying to them for benefit. We do that on a regular basis. And even though we know those are the men who call themselves benefactors, but the only reason they have anything to give to you is because they've exercised authority over your neighbor and taken something away from your neighbor. Another item mentioned here is distributing knowledge. You know, that is probably more important for the church than almost anything else. Because the ministers need to give people, because it's through lack of knowledge that you will perish. Information about how the kingdom works. Now, knowledge alone is not the answer. It's the virtue that makes the difference. Cleansing the soul and the body and the mind of the congregations of envy, hate, ignorance, apathy, avarice. You cannot have those vices in your congregation and actually survive by faith, hope, and charity, like those Eskimos out there in the Arctic. If they were full of apathy, they would freeze in their igloos before winter was over. If they hated and envied, jealousy, if they wanted more and were selfish, they wouldn't survive. They had to be charitable. They had to be forgiving because they needed each other. We don't need each other. We got government. We can alienate almost everybody. Now, somebody was telling me about somebody who needed some help for chelation therapy, and from what I remember, they said they had 7 children, but their children didn't live nearby. And they only needed like $1,500 for this treatment that had shown promise in the past for people who had ailment where she needed this treatment to help cleanse her body so that her immune system could possibly fight off this medical issue. And the $1,500 among 7 children should not be a problem. It should be an easy amount to come up with, or at least a sizable portion of it. That they can't come up with that for their mother, no matter how far away they live, they ought to be able to come up with that amount of money. Yet they were coming to the church, and here we had people who knew nothing of these people, never met them, and we don't even know if this lady was a part of the church and contributing to the church. But she was a need. And the church cannot be specifically only there for people who are a part of their congregation. We need to have so much charity amongst ourselves that we actually have a surplus that reaches out to others. This is what the Essenes were like at the time of Christ. They were the only group that had so much charity amongst their numbers that they actually were able to help people outside of their community. And it's amazing to study the Essenes that you find that the Essenes were the only group at that time that was doing everything that Christ said we were to do. So you can't hardly imagine that the first Christians were Essenes. But people say, well, they're never mentioned in the Bible. Well, they didn't call themselves Essenes. So you won't find the word Essenes in the Bible. Essenes actually means healer. And you will find the word healer in the Bible. One of the apostles was specifically called a healer. Now, we may translate that into doctor, but it's very possible that what they were saying is that he was one of these Essenes. There's a great deal of evidence that John the Baptist was a part of the Essene community. But what were the Essenes doing? We're not interested in the names. You say, well, I'm an Essene, or I'm a Nazarene, or I'm a Christian. It doesn't mean anything. Those are just labels you put on something. You know, if I put a label on something, it does not change its nature. And it's the nature of the Christian we want to know what that was. The nature of the Israelite who was obeying the words of God. We want to know what that is, because that's the true Israel, is the ones who are following the ways of God. Israel means the place where God prevailed. He prevailed. But when they abandoned God and his ways, they were no longer Israel. They were something else. They might have come from that bloodline, but that doesn't mean anything. Not those who say, Lord, Lord, or not those who have a particular bloodline, but those who do with the will of the Father and keep the covenant of the Father. If you don't keep the covenant, you're out. You're out. That's it. So what is that covenant? Do you love your neighbor as yourself? Moses said you should. Jesus said you should. If you're a Jew listening to this broadcast, are you doing what Moses said? Israel over there in the Middle East is not. They have heavy graduated income tax. They have property tax. They have iron coin, diverse weights in their purse. They have centralized bank. The golden calf. They're doing everything the opposite of what Moses. Now, amongst those people, I'm sure that if you were over in Israel today, over in that land we call Israel today, you would find some that are seeking the kingdom of heaven. Probably a very small minority, but they're there, and we need to find them, those who are actually seeking the kingdom of heaven and the righteousness of God and wanting to live according to the righteousness of God, because that's their ritual and ceremony. They can have locks. They can have a hamaca. They can have all those rituals and ceremonies, but if they don't have the Spirit of God operating in their lives, they're going to find themselves looking more like Babylon than the kingdom of God. And that's what we see. We see that in the church today. The churches today are looking more like Babylon. They're doing the same rituals. They cut a tree and bring it in the house so it stands upright, and decorate it with silver and gold. The Bible says not to do that. Nobody hardly ever brings that up. Is that Jeremiah 10? But we do that. But that's not the important thing. Say, oh, well, I don't do that anymore. I don't put up a Christmas tree anymore, because it says in the Bible we're not to put up a Christmas tree. I don't celebrate that kind of pagan holiday. But the important thing is, do you have the rituals and ceremonies of Christ? Do you have the rituals and ceremonies of Abraham and Moses? Do you have living altars upon which you sacrifice a little of whatever you produce, a little of your blood during the year? When a shepherd kills a sheep, that's his blood that flows out, not just the sheep's. He owns that sheep. That's his sweat and blood that brought that sheep to where it needed to be. So maybe we should tell a sheep herding story. Yesterday, the sheep that we take care of, the actual sheep, four-legged ones, you know, wool all over them, those sheep, the ones we shear. We don't shear the congregation of the people. We shear the sheep in the field, as one neighbor likes to call them, the field maggots. Not fond of sheep. He just does that to tease me. But anyway, they got out of the field. They escaped. They went through two fences and got way over into another field. And in that other field they got into, that was the field where the neighbor keeps his bulls. So there's like 20 bulls over there. And if you walked out in the field, they put their tails up, and they're used to being worked on horse. They're not used to seeing men on foot, so they get spooked. But we went over the fence and went out there, and as soon as the sheep saw us, they took off, knew they were in the wrong place. Those bad, bad sheep. And they took off and tried to get back. We could see where they were going to the fence. It was a splice that they had been able to lift up and get underneath. And we had one group of sheep that were still back in the field where they belonged. And they stood there, and they saw us, and they saw us go get these others. And we got all those sheep back together again. And the bulls didn't come after us. But we had to go out into the field where the beasts were, the bulls, and by our mere presence saying, you know, you're not supposed to be in this field, they knew they had done wrong, and they ran back where they were supposed to be. And that's kind of what's happened today in the world. The people have strayed. They're lost sheep. They're in the places where they should not be. They're far, far away from where they should be. And they need to get back there right away. And so we have to send ministers out to go into the field, not just simply to make them comfortable where they're at, but to encourage them to get back to where they're supposed to be. So we're not here just to give out charity, especially out of our own pockets. We're here to teach a society, a community, a nation, how to become charitable again. And so I asked, like, for instance, in the case of the lady who needs the chelation therapy, where are her children? Where are her friends? The minister should not be taking from every other minister. We had ministers who were quickly ready to donate some money to the cause. But $1,500, that's quite a bit for most of us because we're all barely struggling to get by. But first job of the minister is to go to her family, to her friends, and say, you know, your mother needs this, your friend needs this. According to the practitioner she was going to. And just whether it helps her or not, whether it saves her life or not, is not important as much as by us giving to her need, we save our own soul. Because we are not avarice. We are not apathetic. We're not ignorant of the needs of our community, but we're actually there, Minutemen for Christ, by being Minutemen for each other. This is the message of Christ. This is the message of Moses. This is the message of Abraham. This is the way to cure society of its ills. Go elect a different benefactor who exercises authority, and you will have solved nothing. Absolutely nothing. Because the leaders you have is evidence of your problem. It's not the problem. Your problem is your problem. Now remember, a nation is a people. Are you a nation of God? There's someone sent me something today. I didn't get a chance to read it before the program. I think something about Pat Boone was quoting let's see, I was going to look here, see if I could find it so I could quote it for you, but I'm not finding it right off. But anyway, somehow or other, Pat Boone was quoting that the President Obama or somebody had said this is no longer a Christian nation. Well, a nation is not, you don't create a nation with a constitution. You create a government with a constitution. You create a nation by having children. Because a nation is composed of people. Those people create constitutions. You have to get the order right. A nation is a people, and the constitution is a byproduct of the people. And the government that that constitution morphs into over a period of time, which has now become a social democracy, that social democracy is a byproduct of who the people have become. So if you want to change the government, first you must change the people. And if you can change the people by force, then you're going to get a tyranny. You're going to get despots. But if you change the people, allow the people to change by choice, then you're going to get a freedom based upon the perfect law of liberty, a nation of free people. Now, the problem with that formula is that most people do not want to be free, okay? Write it down. They do not want free. They want to be humble. And there's no place in the kingdom of heaven for them, because they want to be comfortable even if it costs them their neighbor's freedom. Now, that's what most people want. Write it down. Remember it. What can you do about that, since most people don't want to go the way of the kingdom? Well, it doesn't matter. You go the way of the kingdom. Start seeking the kingdom, which is a relationship between you and God that is blessed by the ways of God. It is based by faith, hope, and charity. We're not starting churches so you have a place to sing on Sabbath or Sunday. We're not starting churches so that you can feel good about what you did wrong all week. We are helping you form and conform to the ways of Christ, forming congregations of record so we can love one another, and congregations for love.
You have been listening to The Keys of the Kingdom with Brother Gregory of His Holy Church. For more information on the educational ministry provided by His Holy Church and Brother Gregory, including services, counseling, lectures, books, and other audio materials, please write to His Church at Summer Lake, Box 10, Summer Lake, Oregon, 97640. You can also find us on the web at www.hisholychurch.net.